Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. It is showtime. Welcome.
Absolutely. Excited to talk about Iowa politics.
Oh, do we have a lot to talk about? So let's jump in. The state legislature now in its second week of overtime, meaning lawmakers' daily allowance for lodging and meals has expired, and they really want to adjourn and go home, but they can't because there's a whole lot of unfinished business, though a little bit got done today. But first, let's talk about former Vice President Mike Pence coming to Iowa this past weekend. And did he make the rounds, Laura?
Yes, it's his third trip to Iowa since leaving office, and he clearly is not closing the door on running for president. I don't really know what his niche is supposed to be in the Republican Party of Iowa, the way it stands now, but he was praising the governor. He was praising Senator Grassley. He was praising Representative Feenstra. So he's trying to score points with all the top Iowa Republican officials.
You have mentioned all three, and he did say, pardon my froggy throat here, that he's been a fan of Governor Reynolds since before he said it was cool. And I guess it's cool now.
I don't know when it wasn't cool. I don't think that Governor Reynolds has ever been too controversial a figure in Republican circles. But I think that she became, during the COVID-19 pandemic, her national profile rose because Iowa was so aggressive about reopening and about getting students back in school in person full time. So I think that may be what he was referring to when he was alluding to when it became cool to like the governor.
So the interesting thing is going to be that the vice president, if he decides to run, he will likely be running against his former boss, President Trump. And the two have had somewhat of a falling out, shall we say, since the VP refused to overturn the results of the election in 2020. So that's going to divide Republicans in Iowa and everywhere.
I just don't know what constituency Pence has. I mean, I haven't seen any polls specifically among Iowa Republicans, but in national polls, obviously, Donald Trump still has a lot of support. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has a lot of support. Ted Cruz, people may not remember, won the Iowa caucuses on the Republican side in 2016. Donald Trump came second. So I think that all of those people have potential, but I just don't know who is a Mike Pence Republican. It's just hard for me to understand.
One more note nationally before we head back to the state legislature. The Washington Post, the August Washington Post, weighed in editorially on Sunday, yesterday, if you're listening to us on Monday night, on the question of whether Iowa should remain first in the nation when it comes to the presidential nominating calendar. And the Post said, no unclear language here, resoundingly, no.
Yes, I think that in people on the coast and in the large states, I mean, there has been momentum building against the Iowa caucuses, especially on the Democratic side. The system is very difficult for people to participate in, and the state is seen as not representative, certainly not representative of the Democratic Party base and not representative of the country ethnically and racially. So I wasn't surprised to see that editorial. And I think that what's going to be interesting to watch is the Republican Party has said, we want Iowa to be first. And if the Democratic Party definitively rejects Iowa's application to remain first, I'm not sure what is going to happen with that, because Iowa state law does say that we hold the first caucus and that it has to take place 8 days before the first primary election. And so that may mean that the Iowa Democratic Party holds an unsanctioned caucus, and that could mean that Iowa delegates don't get seated at the Democratic National Convention.
Stay tuned to Capital Week. We are going to be on top of this one as well as everything else, and that includes the state legislature. As I said earlier, now in its second week of overtime, they are just buried alive. They can't get out of there, but they made some progress today involving the State House and Senate reaching an agreement on an E15 bill, one that would mandate that Iowa gas stations sell fuel with 15% ethanol instead of the 10%. Talk about that compromise.
So this was one, we've talked about it earlier in the session. This is what I call the clash of the lobbying titans in Republican politics, because you have the big ag groups, the corn growers, the ethanol producers, biofuels. They really wanted this ethanol mandate bill that would require most gas stations to sell this higher ethanol blend. And it did pass the Iowa House it stalled in the Senate. It didn't move at all. And so I was a little surprised by that. I thought that it would head to the governor's desk. It was something Governor Reynolds has talked about repeatedly in public, and then it just stopped. So I was trying to figure out what was going on the Senate side. And it seems like the main sticking point was the protections for these small mom and pop gas retailers, where it just would be very expensive for them to retrofit their stations. They don't sell enough of a volume of gas to make that worthwhile. So it sounds like the amendment that was passed in the Iowa Senate Ways and Means Committee today would have more protections, more support for these smaller retailers, and more exemptions for them. So it sounds like this is something that the House may be on board with, and the governor's office is definitely on board with it. So this will be a success that the governor can sign into law. There were the fuel retailers, the convenience stores, they don't like this. Americans for Prosperity, which is a Koch-funded group, they don't like this ethanol mandate at all, but it sounds like they lost this lobbying battle behind the scenes.
Right. And that vote could take place in both the full houses later this week, and we'll be tracking that. Now, last week, lawmakers sent a bill to the governor's desk that will grant more rights to Iowans who live in mobile home parks. Now, on the surface, you would think that this would be a bipartisan thing. It wasn't. Republicans were generally in favor, Democrats opposed. So let's talk about why there's this split on this mobile home park protection bill for renters.
Well, I followed this bill fairly closely because a regular guest author of mine at Bleeding Heartland actually lives in one of these affected mobile home communities in Waukee, where out-of-state investors purchased the park and jacked up the rent about 50%, gave only 60 days notice in 2019. And so that's what kicked off a lot of the activism surrounding this issue. And there were real attempts in the 2019 and 2020 legislative sessions to get something done. They had bipartisan bills that went much further than the bill that passed last week. And it wasn't clear to me whether there was a little bit of kabuki theater going on, because these bills would either sail through the House and then nothing happened in the Senate, or the Senate would pass it and then in the House it wouldn't be brought to the floor. So I wasn't sure whether this was passing this kind of a bill in one chamber but not the other was maybe an attempt to give legislators the opportunity to tell their constituents they voted for the bill without any serious attempt to pass it, or what. But what happened, basically, the deal that passed last week gave the mobile home park owners almost everything they wanted. And the residents who own the homes, the way this business works is residents own their homes, but mobile home is a little bit of a misnomer, because most of them can't really be moved. After a few years, they deteriorate. They don't have the integrity to be easily moved from one park to another. So they're stuck in place and they have to pay rent on the patch of ground where their home sits, but they have to do all the maintenance on their home. But if their rent goes up, and many of the mobile home park residents are living on fixed incomes, it's just very difficult. So the bills that had been discussed in past years were much more like giving the mobile home residents the kinds of protections that other renters already have, people renting apartments or people renting duplexes or single family homes. They have a lot more protections than people who live in mobile home parks. And the bill that passed just, you know, it said that the park owners have to give a little bit more notice, 90 days instead of 60 days. It increased the homeowner's protection from retaliation from 6 months to 12 months. It said that landlords have to provide water and utilities, but it really fell short of anything like what people were seeking, which was more of a restriction on how many rent increases could happen in a year, the size of the rent increase. Those are things that are regulated for apartment dwellers, but really much less regulated for people who live in mobile homes.
Right. Now, that's the first time I believe we've ever used the term kabuki theater in the years we've been doing this broadcast. For our audience, kabuki theater, I have instant access to this information, a form of classical theater in Japan known for its elaborate costumes and dynamic acting. In the terms of politics, it's used to describe an event characterized more by showmanship than by content. Unlike what you and I do, we're much more content than showmanship. We're not kabuki theater here.
I'm sorry, my blogger background is showing, because kabuki theater was a very common expression in the blogosphere of the 2000s, and that's where I picked it up. So a classic example was when the healthcare reform bill was being debated, and some people thought that there wasn't a sincere effort to pass a public option as part of that bill, that it was more kabuki theater. So
right. Although next week, I think as a result of learning about all of this, I think I will wear a costume during this broadcast. All right. The state Senate took action last week in passing legislation that would let 16 and 17-year-olds work unsupervised in child care facilities and establish staff-to-child ratios. The Republicans have been touting this bill as one to help with the workforce problems.
Yes. I mean, the Iowa House, the last couple of years, the Iowa House has passed a number of bills on child care that the Senate didn't take up or didn't approve, didn't move out of committee. And so this year, the Senate is finally doing something on child care. But this falls short of what the Democrats say, that what they are hearing from people in the field is that they need to raise wages, that the key is to raise wages for child care workers. And that's how you deal with the shortage. And the approach that this bill took is, as you mentioned, allow 16-year-olds to work to supervise school-age children. And also, as part of that bill, would allow one staff member to be supervising a larger number of children. So for two-year-olds, it would go up to a 7 two-year-olds in a room with one staff member. And for three-year-olds, it would go up to 10 in a room. And that's a lot, honestly. My mother-in-law taught preschool 3 and 4-year-olds for about 30 years. And a 10-to-1 ratio is really a lot for one person to ask. And so the Democrats, I mean, they during the Senate debate, a number of Democratic amendments went down. One of them would have said that parents have to be notified if a daycare or child care center changes so that they have increased the ratio or hire 16-year-olds. And that went down. So this is not going to end up being bipartisan like some of the child care bills that passed that cleared the Iowa House over the last couple of years. Some of those were bipartisan. This is definitely not going to be a bipartisan bill.
Right. One that was, though, bipartisan passed the Senate last week, giving a police agency the right to share a driver's license photo when someone's missing or when that person is suspected of being involved when a child is missing. It had already passed the House unanimously, so this one's on the way to the governor.
Yes, and that, again, that I don't know why it hadn't passed the Senate sooner, but yes, this was it changed the rules on when the Department of Transportation can share a driver's license photo with police. And again, not controversial. And generally, I would say the Iowa legislature in recent years has been fairly generous in giving police the resources that they want.
Right. Okay, let's talk about what still needs to be resolved in the legislature. Most of the work is going on behind the scenes. One of the big thing, the big thing, one of them is the state budget. You have to have a state budget. How close are we to any budget?
Well, we're pretty far apart. The House has passed versions of most of the budget bills, all but one of the appropriations bills. The standings bill, which is usually the last bill to pass before they adjourn, is the only one the House hasn't approved. The Senate Appropriations Committee is not moving on any of these bills, and they say that they aren't going to do that until the House passes the voucher proposal, the education savings accounts proposal. And that is just something that they still do not have the votes to pass in the Iowa House. So the two sides, as far as I am hearing, are far apart on that issue. And I've heard that this is going to be a critical week, whether the Senate backs down and decides to cut a deal on some other bills and start working on the budget. Or I've even heard speculation that if they don't reach an agreement this week, that they might just pack up for the whole month of May and come back after the June 7th primary and try to get a budget passed during the last 3 weeks of June. That would be very tight because the new fiscal year starts on July 1st. And if the budget bills are not in place and signed into law by the governor by July 1st, then we could have a partial state government shutdown.
This is kind of surprising to an onlooker that private school tuition, using public money for private school tuition, has blocked almost everything else in the state legislature. If before the legislative session started this year, I wouldn't have bet on this one being the blocker, would you?
Well, it was clear that there was resistance to it last year. It didn't get through last year in the version that the governor wanted. And then when they added sweeteners to it this year for rural school districts, I thought they would probably find the votes. That plus the fact that in the House, they do have a 60-40 majority. That's quite a large majority. But I am hearing that they are still anywhere from 15-20 votes short of what they need. And the governor has really been working hard. She's been meeting one-on-one with some of the House Republican holdouts And according to some sources, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette reporters were talking about this on their podcast late last week, that the governor is getting involved in some Republican primaries. There are about a dozen Iowa House Republicans who are in competitive primaries, and some of those don't support this voucher proposal. And so I haven't heard of any public endorsements, but I've heard that behind the scenes, the governor is getting involved and trying to get people elected in Republican primaries who support the idea, and in case they need to come back and work on it next year. I mean, again, it is extraordinary in a trifecta with large majorities in both chambers that they haven't been able to get this governor's priority through.
One more thing that's blocking things in the legislature. Let's skip to the bottle bill. The House and the Senate seemed to be close on this one, but just different enough to keep them at loggerheads. And Laura, you're telling me we may not have a bottle bill? You're killing me on this one. We may not have a bottle bill?
I'm going to stick with my position of betting against the bottle bill deal happening. I don't think that it matters enough to the House or Senate leadership. I think that the unemployment benefit cuts, that's something that's very important, Governor. And so I do think that bill will be part of any final deal. And there are lots of smaller, lower profile bills that could be in the mix. For instance, there's a proposal that would reduce the number of governor's appointees who need to be confirmed by the Iowa Senate. That's something that could be thrown in there. There's a midwifery licensing bill that the House passed, but the Senate hasn't approved. So, I mean, a lot of things could be in the mix, but somebody has to really want it to happen. And on the bottle bill, I feel like there's no one person in the House or Senate leadership who has a really strong stake in it happening, and the governor hasn't put a lot of political capital behind it happening. So I just don't know. It could be part of the mix, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're back next year talking about more bottle bill changes.
Oh, my. It's been only 40 years in the making. It'll be another disappointment if it happens, or doesn't happen, rather. It's 17 after the hour. Wherever you're listening to us, we hope you're enjoying it. We certainly are. You're in tune with KHY Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bell, and as I said last week, we are your one-stop sorcerers, and we're here every week at this time to talk about politics Iowa style and how it's affecting all of us, and we might even talk kabuki theater. All right. A key Republican lawmaker said last week he was interested in clarifying the apparent conflict in Iowa's election law that was the key to keeping Democrat Abby Finkenauer on the primary election ballot. We're talking Bobby Kaufman. What's he saying?
So he is the state government chair, committee chair in the Iowa House. And it's clear that Republicans want this. They want to have a date be required on a petition so that if you don't have the date correct, that the signature would be disqualified. That's not what the law says. And that was the key that saved Abby Finkenauer. I don't know if it'll happen this year. It could be part of this deal. The Senate State Government Committee Chair, who's been the architect of most of the election law changes the last 5 years, Robbie Smith, is running for state treasurer. So he won't be around. Win or lose the state treasurer's race, he's going to be out of the Iowa Senate. There will be a new state government committee chair. And it could be that Bobby Kaufman on the House side, since he has more experience running that committee, he may have a little bit more control over how the bill is drafted next year. So I wouldn't be surprised if it happens next year. Of course, there's no reason to rush to do it now because it wouldn't affect this year's cycle. They can pass a bill in 2021 that would affect the 2024 cycle. So not sure that they're going to get it done before they adjourn, but I do expect Republicans to pass some kind of a law that says if you don't have the date correct on a signature, then it doesn't count toward that candidate's total.
Right. And just to summarize, the state Supreme Court overturned a lower court decision that knocked Abby Finkenauer off the ballot. The state Supreme Court reinstated her so she can run for the Democratic nomination to eventually run against Chuck Grassley.
Yes, and just to be clear, there is a little bit of a conflicting portions of state law where there's one part that says the voter has to write the name, address, city, and date on the signature. But then there's another part that lists the reasons why you can't count a signature, and it doesn't say anything about a missing date or an incorrect date. So that was the conflict where the lower court judge said, well, look, this Iowa Code 4315 says you have to have a signature or you have to have a date on a signature. But the Supreme Court said, well, 4314 lists the reasons why you don't count signatures and it doesn't say anything about a date. So what I think they're going to do is amend that part of the code to add this missing date or incorrect date to the list of reasons why you can't count a signature.
Right. All right, let's talk garbage. Specifically, the governor signed a law last week that seeks to legislatively overturn a state ban on warrantless police searches of garbage. Okay, the new law says that people have no reasonable expectation of privacy for garbage that you or I place outside our residence for the collection in a publicly accessible area. Now, one of my favorite blog sites, that would be Bleeding Heartland, yours, wrote last week that the law could be unconstitutional. So, Laura, you've got the kabuki stage.
Yes, well, I've been following this bill. It's a fascinating story because the Iowa Supreme Court came out with this decision last June, and it surprised a lot of people because the U.S. Supreme Court has held for decades that police can search garbage or trash placed outside someone's home without a warrant. And the Iowa Constitution, as Article 1, Section 8, which talks about unreasonable search and seizures, has almost identical language to the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. But what the Iowa Supreme Court majority did last summer is they said our state constitution requires us to go farther than what the U.S. Supreme Court has said, and we offer a greater protection against unreasonable search and seizures. And so they said a Clear Lake police officer did conduct an unreasonable search when he searched through, pulled someone's trash a few times to collect evidence that was then later used to obtain a search warrant. And they sent that case back to the lower court. That person had been convicted of a crime based on that evidence. And so this surprised a lot of people in the legal world. And of course, law enforcement and including some state legislators who have law enforcement backgrounds were outraged about it. So what this bill is saying is the public policy of the state of Iowa is that you have no expectation of privacy in garbage. Police don't need a warrant to search through your garbage. But here's the thing. The Iowa Supreme Court is the arbiter of it, and they have control over interpreting those clauses in the state constitution. This isn't like the election law that we were just talking about, where they interpreted parts of the election code and the legislature can go in and change that tomorrow. This, when the Iowa Supreme Court bases a ruling on their interpretation of the state constitution, in theory, the legislature can't override that. They would have to pass a state constitutional amendment and go through that whole process that takes years to amend the constitution, which is what they're trying to do to state, for instance, that the Iowa constitution doesn't protect a woman's right to an abortion. That's what they're trying to do to overturn a 2018 Iowa Supreme Court ruling. So this garbage search bill was really fascinating on that level. I also found it interesting because it passed the Iowa Senate unanimously. There wasn't really much debate on it. Then in the Iowa House, they have a defense attorney, Mary Wolf, who's a state representative from the Clinton area. And so she made a very strong case on this constitutional argument. And so they ended up with 36 votes against it in the Iowa House. And it was a bipartisan vote. It was primarily Democrats voting against the bill, but five Republicans joined them as well.
So this is a very interesting thing. Just very briefly here, when you put your garbage out, and we all have to do it every week or 2 weeks, you are essentially abandoning it on the street. So anybody can come by and look at your garbage and get in there. And so it's just an interesting concept here that the police cannot do that, but somebody else could.
Yes. Well, I mean, I guess the Fourth Amendment or the Article 1, Section 8 of the Iowa Constitution are protecting against government acts, unreasonable searches by the government. They don't say anything about private individuals. And so that was something that came up during the Supreme Court opinion. And by the way, this was a controversial opinion even among the Supreme Court justices. It was a 4-3 ruling, and the three justices all wrote their own separate dissents, and they would have followed the U.S. Supreme Court logic on this issue, and they would have said, look, you've abandoned this. It's not something that you can then claim that you have an expectation of privacy if you leave garbage outside your home. I mean, one of the issues with the bill that they just passed is it talks about a publicly accessible area, but it doesn't define what a publicly accessible area is. So the Republican floor manager was saying that this is talking about if you leave it by the curb or on the street, but the bill doesn't really say that. So, I mean, if you leave it next on your porch, on your back porch, and I can come around and walk around the side of your house and find your garbage and go through it, or a police officer can do it, technically that would be allowed under this bill. That's a publicly accessible area if you don't have it in a locked garage. So that's going to be something that I assume will be litigated as soon as somebody gets convicted based on evidence from a warrantless, a garbage search.
Right. Have just a little bit less than 5 minutes to go here. So let's zoom down to Iowa joining a multi-state southern border strike force. It was announced last week. The governor's always had an affinity for making a show of force down at the southern border. What's this one all about?
Yes, I mean, this one, I saw people saying this is unconstitutional, but really when you look at it, it's just an intelligence sharing agreement. It's not really setting up strike. American governor's border strike force makes it sound like they're raising some sort of Republican governor's army to go down on the southern border. But that's not, the agreement is just talking about sharing intelligence, mainly about the drug trade. And the governor said that she was joining this thing because fentanyl and other drugs are prevalent in the communities and we have to protect ourselves, and arguing that the Biden administration was not doing enough to stop the flow of drugs across the southern border. So it was, it's basically Republicans, states with Republican governors are the ones that joined this alliance.
Republican governor's army. That's kabuki theater. All right, let's talk about the coronavirus. State Supreme Court ruled this past Friday, I'm not going to let you forget that one, Laura, that insurance companies are not liable for losses caused to restaurants because of coronavirus shutdowns and restrictions. The court specifically ruling against a couple of places that had to close and then limit their capacity. So insurance companies not liable for losses caused by the coronavirus for restaurants. That's interesting.
Well, these were unanimous rulings, and it was based on the language that was in the insurance contracts. They talked about physical damage to the property, and the Iowa Supreme Court said that being forced to close because of a state order in order to slow the spread of a virus is not the same as physical damage to your building. And it's also not the same as, like, let's say if your restaurant had to be closed because other buildings around you were damaged or they were working on the road and people couldn't get to your parking lot. That might be something where you could claim that there was some physical damage. Not a difficult call for the Iowa Supreme Court. And so it was the restaurant and a country club, a clubhouse, both in Des Moines, that had taken this case to the Supreme Court. And I don't think anyone in the legal community was too surprised that they lost.
Okay. Well, we still have a couple of minutes. And you wrote on Bleeding Heartland that the governor, Governor Reynolds, had deleted a few days ago what was headlined as a wildly inappropriate Passover meme. What was that all about?
Well, on Friday, April 15th, which was the first night of Passover, the governor's official Twitter account posted a happy Passover with an image that showed a lot of, it didn't show the two universal symbols of Passover, which are matzah and a Seder plate. By the way, if for listeners who aren't aware, I'm Jewish, so my family celebrates Passover, pretty familiar with the practice. But this meme, it did show a menorah. It showed a number of other things associated with Hanukkah. It showed donuts, which are a traditional food eaten during Hanukkah, but actually are forbidden during Passover because they're made with leavening agents. It showed apples and honey, which is a traditional food for Rosh Hashanah, which is a Jewish New Year that happens in September or October. So just about everything about this meme was wrong, and it started attracting a lot of attention. I first noticed it because a KCRG reporter who happens to be Jewish called attention to it and said that he felt that the intention was good, but the person who posted this image obviously doesn't know anything about Passover or why we celebrate it. And by Saturday morning, it was getting hundreds of reactions, including from national reporters who were questioning why this thing was still on the governor's Twitter feed. And so it disappeared by about noon on Saturday, but there was no explanation. I couldn't get a comment from her office. They didn't post anything to say, oh, by the way, happy Passover with a more appropriate image. It was just gone. So, and the governor's, both the Facebook and Twitter, that meme disappeared. And also, but the governor did acknowledge Easter on her Twitter account, but not Passover anymore.
15 seconds. What do you expect this week in the House and the Senate?
Well, they're either going to cut a deal. I think they will cut a deal rather than coming back in June. I mean, I think that would be really risky to do that. But it's possible that we'll be talking next week about the same thing we're talking about this week. No deal on the budget and the other outstanding issues.
Okay, that is it. We are out of time for this edition of Kabuki Theater. You have been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will Zoom right back here in this time slot next week in appropriate costume for the theater, when we'll have the latest on what's going on politically inside and outside the state capitol. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.